Now, here's Dave Pezzo on KITO Talk Radio.
And speaking of nice, our great friend Dave Pezzo is with us. And much to the chagrin of our friend Terry from State College, Pennsylvania, that sent me a ton of stuff over vacation. Thank you, Terry, about the end of the financial world as we know it. We did survive 2017. And what a huge, huge year for the economy, for President Trump. And before we get to that, I'd be remiss. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Kevin.
You know, good to have you. I was a little worried, you know, if you were going to be here today because it's Tuesday, not Monday.
I know. It is confusing. It feels like Monday, doesn't it? Totally does.
Feels like something. You know?
Yeah.
But when we take a look at the year, how big of a year historically was it? And let's go back. I mean, does this rival what we had back in the Reagan era where, you know, we were, and it's funny, you would remember this. Reagan's motto was, let's make America great again.
Yes.
And it's funny that a lot of folks in politics today, they don't remember that.
No.
That's all Trump did was just take away let's. So let's go back to the Reagan era.
Yep.
How big of a revival or recovery have we had in comparison?
You know, comparatively, it was a slower start for Reagan, right? Because we came out of the Carter years, if you will, where we had super high inflation and we had all kinds of issues in this country, malaise.
And you're right about that. A lot of folks don't understand. Interest rates were what, 20% or 14%?
21.5 at the peak.
Okay. Not only that, but you had, what was it, the OPEC embargo?
Yep.
Which, imagine going to a gasoline station and you have a line. No, I'm not talking about one or two people. I mean, there were block-long lines.
Yep. Yeah.
Very different world than what we have today.
Totally, totally. People talk about, oh, yeah, I remember that. It was great. I got, you know, 16% on a CD. You got that for like 6 months, and that's it. And I don't know why people cling to like some great memory like that, because here's the other side of that. Inflation was 12%.
Right.
See, during that era, people forget that's where the misery index came from, which was the unemployment rate plus the inflation rate. Reagan coined it.
I and remember the misery, well. The misery index.
Yeah.
I use that a lot around here.
Do you?
The misery index.
The misery index.
Yes, there's a gentleman who has a fun meter, and I go, you have no credibility. If you wore a misery index, then right. You'd have something. But
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway,
on to that. Yes, right. Is it like the Reagan era? No. It's not. It's very different because we're not coming off of a low. We are coming off of a low from a business perspective, from that animal spirits perspective that you and I talked about for years here, where business is coming into its own now. It's allowed to breathe instead of being killed by the federal government, which seemed to be the objective of the Obama administration. And again, I'm just not just anti-Obama. We don't know what he was trying to do except destroy business and the culture of this country. So it was a very, very difficult 8 years. That's what we're coming out of, Kevin, but not an actual recession or 21%. So what was astounding about this market was it has been performing very well since the bottom in 2008, but it accelerated. And that was what was astounding last year. It didn't just do good. It did great. And that's one of the things that the market does do a lot of is having really good years, but not after you have sequentially so many good years as it's had. And that's what was surprising, I think, last year to everybody.
Dave Pezzo with us here. Kevin Miller in the morning at KIDO Talk Radio, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you have a question, here's a few headlines for you. A Bitcoin crash, a burst housing bubble, giant bank sees 30 risks to markets for 2018. What say you?
There's always risks, and there's probably more like 60 of them instead of 30. But the thing that gets the market is the things that we don't see or plan for. It's not going to be the thing that's hanging right there on the calendar. On this day, something's going to happen. It's the things out of the blue that occur. Now, that's usually on the good side, and people forget about that, right? We were expecting this to be bad, and this, and this, and this, and this. And then it's not. We didn't expect the economy to accelerate and grow as fast as it did this year. It did accelerate for no good reason, right? What were the good reasons? Well, they were because the animal spirits of the business world came out. Business confidence is at record levels. Consumer confidence has picked up to record levels. Wages are increasing. It is becoming an amazingly strong economy. This without even having tax reform. This without having Obamacare decimated. It's decimating itself, but we don't have a good replacement for it either. So all of these rules are in place. We still have the federal government infested with super left-leaning administrators that are slowing things down and not allowing things to happen. In spite of that, business is saying, this is going to get better, not worse, and so therefore we're going to expand and grow. And I think we're really going to see an acceleration in GDP because now we're starting to see things happen, including it's replacing these administrators who are really snagging things up.
Let's talk a little bit about the price of gasoline, which we've had such a great run. We've had a complete generation of people that really haven't suffered the idea of ultra-high gas prices. Mm-hmm. But now we've got this arrest in Iran. And apparently now, according to one financial report I'm scanning as we're speaking here at KIDO Talk Radio, they're saying this is the strongest oil has been since 2015. Mm-hmm. Now, again, you and I, we have some miles on the odometer. We remember 1979. Yep. We remember the oil embargo. We remember OPEC having a stranglehold mm-hmm. on our economy. What are we talking about with fuel prices here with a possible showdown with the Iranians?
Yeah, this is the great news that's happening now and is completely different than all the rest of our life, Kevin.
Right.
We are not beholden at all to OPEC. We're not beholden. And even Europe now is becoming less beholden to Russia, if you can imagine that. Now, remember, they get all of their natural gas from there. So many times when we're looking like we're the lone wolf out there saying, hey, we shouldn't let them be aggressors in the Ukraine and things like that, the Europeans are worried about freezing in the winter.
Sure.
And because they would be cut off. Well, now we're having, because of our great supplies and the fact that technology now allows us to liquefy, we now have shipments daily of liquid natural gas going over to Europe, going to Asia. And that will do nothing but increase because we are the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. On top of that, what comes out with natural gas? Oil. And so we are also, because of technology, it's all technology. Everybody, it's fracking, it's this, it's because it's so cheap to put a hole in the ground and produce oil out of shale, which until just recently was not even doable.
Are we moving back to the Dakotas?
To the man camp, and
all those trailers that I bought?
We blew the low on the man camp buyout. But the answer is no. They do it with less people now, Kevin. Less technology is necessary. They will eventually have pipelines there.
Right.
So you won't need a bunch of people to drive trucks, which is very dangerous, very bad for the roads, very environmentally terrible. But again, if you're a short-sighted liberal, then all you want to do is make sure that you protest every way to move energy.
But isn't that fascinating? And I, again, Dave Petzo, I live my life vicariously through you. And your show, Money Matter, Saturdays on KIDO Talk Radio from 8 to 10. But I was fascinated by this documentary where you had so many people going from all over the country to go work in the Balkans, to go mm-hmm. work in the Dakotas. People, in their 50s and 60s, driving these trucks in this ultra-cold weather, very dangerous.
Yep.
But they were making a ton of money. With the coming back, and I understand technology is limiting some of those jobs, but that could, spur a lot of folks, right? Do you see people migrating back there at all? And I know I've asked you that before. But.
Sure. And there will be some, Kevin. But again, we're seeing, because it is so fast to drill these wells, and there's much more technology there, you don't need the number of people, you won't need, those man camps are not going to be like they
now,
were.
What was your favorite place to go on vacation?
My favorite place, you mean as a kid or?
No, right now.
Right now.
Like if you said,
ocean.
Ocean.
Anywhere in the ocean. Because it's so different.
The Pacific Ocean.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, yes.
Okay. See, for me, I very rarely have I ever gone on vacation. When I do, it's kind of torture because all I do is think about this thing. But for me, a vacation would be to go to the Dakotas. Maybe not right now.
Yeah.
Because it's cold. But I would be fascinated to spend a day mm-hmm. with those people.
Oh, it is.
Just to see that.
I got to tell you, this was amazing. You remind me of how cool it is in to be in my industry, because I got an opportunity to go out to an oil drilling.
Well, because you're a man of the world. In fact, I hear it was between you and the finalist from Dos Equis, who was the world's most interesting man.
Yeah, so. Right. Oh, yeah.
I can finally reveal that in 2018. But
and it is fascinating, Kevin, though. It is.
You were committed here, though.
Oh, I'm committed totally to doing radio here, not to be the most interesting man in the world.
Right. So you were in an oil rig.
Yeah. It was actually outside of Houston. You go to Houston, and then you drove outside of Houston to a helicopter pad, and 100 miles offshore is where this was.
You went offshore?
Yes.
In the ocean?
In the ocean. And so you're flying out, and a whole group of us land on this place. There's 80 people that live there, live and work. They work 12-hour shifts. Bam, 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 one right after the other. And it's just it's astounding. And because they got to hurry and knock it out. At that time, oil was pretty high, and so it was not over 100, but it was moving higher. And so this particular oil well was during Hurricane Katrina, and it got damaged and tipped over. Like 1,000 feet
not
before.
Not while you were there.
Not while we were there, okay. Exactly. But it was fascinating to see, and it turns out how much money was spent, millions of dollars to drill this well. And Kevin, it was dry. That one had no hit.
What were the living conditions like, though?
They're not bad, not too bad. They spend 1 week on and 1 week off.
That's like, how big are the rooms? I mean, or is it like being on a Navy ship?
A little bit bigger than you would think, because again, you're just talking about a platform that can put it up and then bam. But they do have the rooms are split for two people, because one is working and one's not. So they typically are not going to be together in the same room.
Dave Pezzo with us. Coming up next, we'll talk about Bitcoin. It's tumbling. What does that mean? Plus more of the year ahead and remembering the year that was. Talking about your money on KIDO Talking. And we continue on here with our great friend Dave Pezzo, Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's go to the phones. And we're going to go to Pete in Mountain Home, who has a question about Bitcoin. Good morning, Pete.
Yeah, morning. I would like to confess that I am an escapee from the People's Republic of California. I escaped in 2004, and when I was driving across the Snake River with all my guns in the back of my truck, I was singing Free at Last, Free at Last. But my question, I heard briefly this morning that Bitcoin is like not environmentally sound, because the amount of electricity that it takes for the server farms to process Bitcoin transactions is approximately that of a power plant every day.
I don't know about a power plant, but the fact of the matter is you're correct. It is an extraordinary amount of electric use to mine bitcoins. It's really extraordinary, and the cost to do it is really amazing when you think about the chips, computing power that they use with all their large, if you will, farming activities. It's a very big operation to mine them. I think the cost is something like $2,000 a coin on average to get to mint.
Well, and people who say, well, it's all just electronic, the activity it takes to keep a server farm up, and the actual physical mining that it takes to keep a power plant running, you know, none of this stuff is pure.
No.
It's just electricity. It's like electric cars. Well, where do you think the electricity comes from? The outlet in the wall?
Well, it does come from there, but it has to be put there.
There's a power plant there somewhere.
That's right, behind it, all the way down the line. It's
all those wonderful Tesla batteries, you know, the lithium ion and all the rest of that.
All the mining that goes on to get them, you're absolutely right. That's the way to do it. And we would think about it. We think about it with everything. It's not just a question of electric cars or Bitcoin mining. All these things need to be taken into account for when we think about ethanol and the absurdity of having ethanol and growing, how much of a carbon footprint that leaves in order to supposedly keep us from burning gasoline is absurd. And we never think about those things and how much it costs to plant a field and create fertilizer and to make corn.
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were talking about Bitcoin.
Well, yes.
I thought it was fascinating.
We have the ability to roll into all kinds of things.
I see.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is not environmentally sensitive.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not on the radar for that. It's as much as cows farting. But the point there is that people do need to measure it out, and it is well known how much electricity is used. It's a big deal, and I just don't know what's going to happen with Bitcoin, because it really does have some impacts, even on companies like Micron and certainly Nvidia, which is a chip manufacturer that makes these super incredible chips that allow them to mine for Bitcoin. It would have a big spill out if Bitcoin crashed, but that's not going to cause a stock market crash. It's going to cause Nvidia and other companies, chip companies, to maybe go down a little bit because they're not being put into as many computers. It'll be becoming just a gaming chip and high-end uses, but not for mining Bitcoins. It's not the end of those companies, but it does have other repercussions.
Well, thank you.
Pete, thank you for listening.
Thank you, Pete.
KIDO Talk Radio. And welcome back to KIDO Talk Radio. Dave Petzo, Kevin Miller, as we continue on. So apparently Bitcoin is already having a bad year. For the first time since 2015. The cryptocurrency began the new year by declining, extending its slide from a record $19,511 reached on December 18th. It has fallen now to $13,624.56. That is as of 5 p.m. In New York on Monday. So we take a look at Bitcoin, and I can remember when Bitcoin back in the old days, probably less than a year ago, when it was $2,800 or $2,000,
right,
or $1,400. So where are we with Bitcoin? I know Pete covered it a little.
Yeah.
But I still don't know really what it is. Can you physically hold a Bitcoin?
I think they actually have a thing, an actual Bitcoin. But
really?
You can't transact business with it, but anyway, because it's all digital, but I've seen pictures of them. I think they actually have a coin, but I don't know that either.
So let's say that I was smart,
mm-hmm,
and I bought Bitcoin.
That's a big stretch.
Me
too. I got to say, buying Bitcoin was not my thing.
Some things,
missed it.
You know, some things are just universal, and that's a stretch saying I'm smart. So I had, you know, maybe $5,000 laying around. And I put it into this Bitcoin, and let's say I bought it reasonably high I got 5 Bitcoins,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm.
So today, you know, would I go to the Bitcoin ATM and cash those out if I wanted to?
You would have to sell them, and that's expensive to do. As you know, you talk about your friend that does,
right,
Bitcoin transactions, and that it costs 5-10% per transaction either side. So
right, and that's at the Boise Tech Mall, our friend Phil.
Yep.
Who has the only Bitcoin ATM in the Treasure Valley, I think in the state of Idaho.
Yeah.
And I think it's like 3% or 5%, something like that. But, okay, so, but technically,
yeah,
I could do that, right? I could.
You absolutely could.
Or
yeah.
Would I, or it would be like when you buy gold from these folks and you have to find the buyer of the, you know, of the certain type of gold.
Right. You would go down here to one of the, you know, it's not a pawn shop, but sort of, you know, or a coin dealer or something like that. And you can transit, take your gold bars in, take your coins in, and for a fee. And it's a pretty steep fee. When we're talking about in a world, Kevin, where, for example, you're transacting a business in a gold mining company or a Bitcoin mining company or just, you know, Procter & Gamble or whatever, you're talking about a spread between the bid and the ask of a penny per share. Nothing. And you're also talking about a cost of, you know, what, $6 or $10 per transaction, no matter how much money. So the spread is very, very narrow. But when you're talking about gold and commodities or Bitcoin, it's very expensive, and people forget about those costs of transaction. You have to be very careful with any hard asset. They're very long duration, should be held a long time.
Now, you study the markets, right?
Sure.
Okay. What's the highest thing you've ever seen consistently rise, like a credible stock or investment, you know, like a good company? Like, what's a reasonable expectation of growth, like something, you know, like General Motors back in the day, or, you know.
Right, or Microsoft or a Google or Apple.
Right.
Yeah. When companies hit it out of the park, and there's so many things that are so difficult on the way to do that. And what I mean is you can literally have invented the best light bulb. That happened here in Idaho, by the way, in Meridian, 25 years ago. They had the very best light bulb in the world. It would last forever, turn itself off, didn't need special switching. It was an incredible thing. And they're out of business. And I lost a lot of money on that too. So it teaches you a lesson about how you can have the best mousetrap.
Well, just watch the movie Tucker.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And you can have the best thing, but when you're trying to market against a General Electric, Philips Electronics, all those things that have a nice stake in keeping light bulbs stupid and that they burn out, it's a tough road. And all on top of that, if you have companies like McDonald's spending millions of dollars because they're going to do a new McJordan burger, they have hamburgers. You already know they have hamburgers. How many millions does it take to generate and get people to spend more for a light bulb because it's really better? That's the problem all these companies run into. But when they figure out from marketing to having a really cool widget like an iPhone, then you can see untold growth, Kevin. So putting a cap on it isn't really possible to say Apple is overpriced or right. What have you, because they really hit on something amazing.
We'll talk a little bit more, and apparently Apple is looking at buying Netflix. What that means for your streaming and viewing next. You're listening to Kevin Miller and Dave Pezzo on KIDO Talk Radio. It's all about people. Dave Pezzo with us as we move along. Now, I was building up to something, and if you're just tuning in, we were talking a little bit about Bitcoin, and you don't have to be a financial expert like our friend Dave Pezzo to really be enamored with Bitcoin. It is blowing up. So here's the deal. So a good, like, let's say Amazon, from year to year, what would be the growth of something really good and stable? Like 20% would be
outstanding? That'd be incredible, right. Okay. And when you're talking about compounded returns over a long period of time, Kevin, a lot of people misunderstand this. The market's done 10% a year.
Okay.
And then let's just say real estate's done 6. And so that's a little bit better. It's not a little bit better. You compound 4% more a year is an astronomical, it's an exponentially bigger number over time. You know, your 401k is now worth, you know, 4 million instead of 1.
So here's the skinny on this. It's taken me a while to build up to this.
Yeah.
So last year, Bitcoin, which again, in my opinion, and you're welcome to disagree and to enlighten us at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, Bitcoin, which to me, I guess there's pictures of it and you can mine it and everything else. Bitcoin last year, at the first day of the year, was $998.
Yeah.
For the entire year, it ended up more than 1,300%.
Yep.
Now, I go back to, if it's too good to be true, It usually is. However, many people believe, and you and I have talked about this, that This cryptocurrency is the future. In fact, we have people creating their own cryptocurrency all the time. We joke about Petcoin all the time.
Correct, right.
But, I mean, 1,300%.
Yep.
Have we ever seen anything like this historically? And is it the old, and again, we all could be wrong. If it goes up, it must go down.
Right, right. Kevin, it's always difficult. When you're talking about a real company, something like an Amazon, a Google, whatever, it's something we can value. You can put a valuation metric on it and say, you know, Apple sells for 15 times next year's earnings, okay? Now, we don't know for sure what next year's earnings are going to be, but we have an idea, right, because of sales and what's going on. So it's not an exact science, and companies can extend that and say now all of a sudden they're at 20, which would be a nice year. That would be up 33% without a movement, positive move in earnings in that case. But when we have this type of a movement where you can't value something like Bitcoin, that's where we take the valuation metrics off the table. And this takes me back to 1999, frankly, the late 90s. When companies in the tech world, .com, right? So we joke about air.com, but it really was like that. And you had companies that were real, and they were selling for large numbers, right? Like Intel and Microsoft and all those. But they're real companies with real products and profits. But the new companies coming out, Kevin, they were going up 1,300%, 2,000% in a year because they were based on nothing but a dream. And so valuation characteristics or metrics were not it wasn't doable. So it became a mania of new tech companies coming out. And that's if you're looking for a recent comparison, I would say it was air.com in the .com era that we all know ended very badly. And although some of those companies survived, like Amazon and Google, et cetera, we did not see companies in that era that so many of them just blew up that were based on vapor.
Indeed. Dave Pezzo with us, taking your calls at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So as I pull this up, people are saying that Apple could possibly buy Netflix. What do you make of that possibility? I like what you know, again, you're a shrewd man. You go, is that just a rumor? Is that something you just came up with? Well, no. I'll get to it in a minute. But I mean, the idea of Apple buying Netflix, we see Disney getting into the Netflix business and everything else. Hulu doing very well. So what do you make of that? And how could the integration, we already see the integration with DirecTV and AT&T. You go to AT&T, you get DirecTV for $15 off or something like that. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that? Here you go. There is a 40% chance that Apple will acquire Netflix, according to Citi, and this is from Yahoo Finance.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's been a speculation, Kevin, for a while that somebody that Apple would finally do a huge acquisition, something game changing like that. And Netflix has always been on the radar for that. What is surprising about this, if they go ahead and do it, is that it's surprising because they could have bought Netflix for clearly a fourth of what they would pay now to get it. So, but Netflix is they're one company that I think it would be a game changer and growth changer for Apple. I think their stock would probably soar on that kind of a news, even though it's going to cost them a lot of money and it's certainly not going to be profitable right off the bat. We know and we see what's going on with Netflix, and it's all about content, Kevin. Right, you know that better than anybody.
Exactly. I live my life.
You live
Netflix.
Your life with content. I mean, it's a content-driven world.
Netflix isn't profitable, though. It's got $5 billion in debt or something like that.
Yeah.
Because of the
it's not profitable now, but that doesn't matter. At Wall Street, you want growth. You need growth. You need more subscribers. You need more people. And they have to spend an extraordinary amount of money to come up with content. But imagine, Kevin, if they just dialed back just a little bit, maybe raise their prices 25%, we'd all go, $2, who cares? And we would still do it. We'd love it. We might complain about the great Satan of Netflix as we sit and binge watch. But the point is that we would still do it. And they could turn profitable the same way Amazon is. So when we measure profit, you have to be careful about these, as we talked about, these valuation metrics on different companies. You have to be careful. We don't want to say this time is different, but different companies, you have to measure in a different way. If Amazon is willing to not make profits and pour everything back into R&D, artificial intelligence, learning more about Kevin Miller so that we feed you the right ads, the right advertising all the time, we give you great examples and you keep spending more money, that's how they choose to spend money. To measure them on some kind of price to earnings ratio is absurd. But at the same, and Netflix is the same way, Kevin. Their subscriber, that's what their metrics is. They keep getting more subscribers, they're going to do very well.
Dave Pezzo with us here. Now let's talk a little bit about Amazon. And everybody, the hottest item is Alexa. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't need to talk to a computer. I just hit the buttons.
Right.
Again, I'm the guy that said, who needs to learn about computers? Who needs to learn about Bitcoin? What do you make of this?
I make Alexa as a beginning of artificial intelligence, of just simply saying, hey, set up my day, make these phone calls, set up these dates that you tell a computer to do all these things, and your life is planned out. Show me my calendar, show me this, and it'll pop up while you're shaving in the morning. So it's one of those things that, or maybe a robot shaves you. But anyway, the point is that this is the beginning of very functional artificial intelligence, and I think it'll get better. And I assume it'll get markedly better, exponentially better, as time goes by. And I also think that there's going to be a lot of competitors to Alexa. They may have a small lead. But the reality is also that there is some political bias to Alexa, at least it appears to be when you ask certain questions. I don't think people want that. I don't care if you happen to be left-leaning. I don't think you want political bias when you ask a question of Alexa or any other artificial intelligence.
Right, but then you have Google doing it and all this. And by the way, it's like these phones. Right, and you know, you're sitting there talking, I'm texting back and forth.
Yep.
I was watching my friend Paul Feinbaum, who we worked together a long time, big sports guy, right? But he's not like your usual sports guy. So they're doing this innovative thing on one of the TV channels last night where they have former players and a current coach.
Yeah.
And back and forth. And Paul, as he inadvertently taught me, is while they're on live TV, Paul Feinbaum is sitting there texting as if he's not paying attention. Now, I know he is, having worked with him, but it's the amazing dark thing. Do we really need these phones? Do we really need Alexa? Or is it, again, the Apple marketing?
Yep.
Where all of a sudden, we're conditioning ourselves that we need this. Hey, Alexa, do this. We have people in the office that say that. I'm like, I'm pretty good with pushing my own button.
Right. And I think that it's a social media thing, a social thing. I look at my daughter, who's a millennial, and I watch her keep screens away from her, my granddaughter, okay? She doesn't want her to be fixated with screens because they're all already natural. It's moving and all that. So she gets limited time with some little Sesame Street thing or what have you every single day, and that's been her whole life. But imagine what a stretch that is for most families and most people. So each person, and even each characteristic, like millennials, we can all kind of steer away from it, Kevin. We can all, it's up to you.
Right.
And for me personally, I can't. I mean, if I'm actually doing something else and I'm not looking at you, the fact of the matter is I'll turn myself in now. I'm not hearing you. I'm not listening to you because I can't do that. I can't.
Right.
I can multitask really badly, or I can get focused on what I'm doing and I can do it pretty well.
And let's go to the phones, and we go to Liberal Steve on KIDO Talk Radio with Dave Petzo. Good morning, sir.
Alexa, call the radio man at KIDO.
Good morning, Mr. Miller. Happy New Year, Dave.
Happy New Year, Steve.
And to you, Mr. Miller.
And to you, sir.
I wanted to ask you, I'm doing a little research here the last 2 days, and I'm going to invest some money in the medical part of California cannabis, because what I can read so far, you can buy stocks in it because they deliver to the door.
Mm.
And it's the growth for this year, if you believe what I've been reading, is phenomenal.
No, it is. There's no question about it. We're talking, I was just reading a big article, I believe in USA Today yesterday, or for Friday, talking about this big move in California. And I think they said, I'm usually pretty good at remembering the numbers I read, but I think they said, or estimated, because it's obviously a black market right now, was $15 billion in California. Now, that's a big industry. That's a big boost to cannabis everywhere. But also people forget that Canada has a national referendum coming up somewhere in the summer, June or July or something like that. So anyway, Steve, I'll put it this way. I think that I was reading also about a week ago or 2 weeks ago in one of the financial journals, a very serious article on whether their cannabis was investable, because a week doesn't go by that I'm not asked two or three times by somebody, is there some way to invest in the explosion of marijuana? And the answer is not yet. There's not. And I don't think realistically, unless you do it direct, and that is you go buy a dispensary, you go grow it. There's a lot of private money. But the reality was, and I thought it was very well said by one of the individuals in there that follows this industry closely. He said, what people forget is that this is a group of people right now in this industry, right now, that are growers and drug dealers from the past. This is not yet cleaned up as an industry, and it is also illegal on the federal basis. So what you're seeing is you're going to see some big players coming in to provide distribution, to provide medical, whether we're already seeing that with Constellation Brands. They're getting into, they bought a company in Canada, I don't know, that grows it or distributes. I don't know what they do, but they bought 10% or something of that company so that they're ready to be involved. But right now, I just don't think, you just need to be careful. It is the Wild West. You will probably lose all your money. Some players will survive, but very, very few. And you can look at any industry that's exploded, whether it's automobiles a century ago. There were hundreds of them, hundreds and hundreds. They all went bankrupt. even though obviously the automobile was big. It's the same with computers, as you know, when we first started with home computing. Those companies all died, and now we have what we think is a very vibrant industry. It was then, too. So we are going to have some targets that do well, but I think you got to be careful, and this is also, if you will, it's a penny stock, which is nothing but a bunch of crooks pumping and dumping stocks as well. So be careful in there, and I don't think it's investable yet.
And you can save your specific questions for Money Matters on Saturday from 8 to 10, Timmy. You're listening to Kevin Miller on KIDO Talk Radio. And we continue on here on KIDO Talk Radio. Dave Pezzo with us. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So we take a look at the next year. We've got a big year coming up when we're talking about elections in the state of Idaho. The direction it's going to go. Governor Otter, after three terms, will ride off into the sunset. Now, we talked to Governor Otter a few years ago, and he thinks that he and Ms. Lori will probably go continue to work, maybe do some nonprofits either within the state of Idaho or perhaps around the world, he told me in one conversation. What are we looking at as far as the state economically as the legislature gets ready to go? And we have, you know, either the lieutenant governor, Brad Little, the congressman, Raul Labrador, or the doctor, Tommy Ahlquist, take over, or A.J. Belukoff. Let's not forget about A.J., very successful businessman and
yep.
beloved here in the Treasure Valley. So what are we looking at post-Butch Otter?
Don't know yet, because I think you're going to have very different regimes for any of those that win. Obviously, if you get a Democrat in there, it will be different than any of the three Republicans. But I don't know that it'll be any more different than you would have from a Labrador versus with a business person. Maybe there's some big changes, but different big changes. Is Brad Little going to bring to the plate some big changes? So far, he's not talked about making any big changes. In fact, as far as I can tell, none of them want to take the risk of coming out and alienating some part yet. It's more like, to me, they're all playing defense so far. And I think the first one to come out and play some offense, other than putting down their opponents, I mean, like saying, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do differently. And something bold would be, in my mind, would catch some attention. And right now, I think we're in that non-attention getting phase because I think we're all bored with it until somebody comes up with something. Or the only thing we seem to cover is when they argue a little bit about something. It's time for them to step up. So I do think that we'll see a change here, Kevin, unless it is Brad Little. I don't think you see much change there. That's, but again, I'm not trying to put words in his mouth. He may come up with something on his platform that's quite different. But economically, Idaho is on fire. Economically, the Treasure Valley here is amazing. And when we think about what Butch Otter did for business down in the Magic Valley, I just, wow. I was in Spokane this past week for a wedding, and I'll tell you something. It was people were talking about articles that they'd read and how many different companies and what's going on there. The biggest yogurt company is in Idaho? No kidding. I mean, it was just that kind of conversation. And it's big. And what's going on down in Twin Falls is amazing. And that is all because, not because of tax giveaways, that's because of giving businesses the ability to quickly get through the red tape that it takes to get a big factory built.
Dave Pezzo with us as we move along. And as we continue on getting ready for the new year with Dave Pezzo, going to the Idaho Business Review, here's a good headline for the Treasure Valley, I guess particularly Boise. It was the year of the hotel.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. As a matter of fact, it's interesting, again, that we were talking about the vibrancy. Here I am in Spokane, which is the epitome of a dead downtown, you know, an old city. And there's money around the area. There clearly is, but not in the downtown area. And you look at what has happened in Boise with housing and everything else. It's not hard to envision Spokane doing that. But right now, it is an ugly, ugly downtown compared to what Boise has going on. So part of that is this incredible number. How many rooms was it, Kevin? Like 500 in downtown?
Amazing.
Yeah, in 1 year. Just astounding number. 4 brand-new hotels. It is amazing when you think about it. And what that's going to bring for the restaurants and downtown businesses is, I just can't imagine the economic impact in the convention center, all those things.
Right. We see that going on. Now, do you expect to see the continued growth that we've had in the past with housing, with everything else? We've got the folks in West Ada. They've got another bond that they've got to pass. Millions of dollars, new schools. People are upset because they're... some of their kids are going to go to Star Middle School on Floating Feather.
Yeah.
And let's see, I guess they'll eventually be not one, but two new high schools in West Ada.
Yeah, it's I expect the growth to slow down a little bit, Kevin, because it's been explosive. I also think that we're going to have to come to some recognition that we're becoming one of the highest property tax states, cities, certainly, in areas, counties, however you want to say it. This area is very high tax. The percentage charge for our mill rate, as they call it, is off the charts. And so if we want to keep passing...
And even within the region, it's high tax.
Even within the region, it's very, very high. It's extraordinary. I cannot believe how much I pay on that downtown building. And
The
Petso Center, yeah. Yes. I mean, as a percentage, it's absolutely incredible. Well, I thought that was probably because it was business, and it's okay to go ahead and hate business. But on a residential side, I'm also equally shocked at how high the percentage is. As I think my own home is like 1.6%. Now, that's very high. California, okay, you know, the overtaxed state of California is 1%.
You know, you could always move out to the hinterlands, get a... where your money goes far further?
It does go further, doesn't it?
And you drive further, too.
And you drive further. It goes further except for at the gas station, yes.
Right. So no one's tried to lure the Petso Center and everybody within that to
No, it's going to be tough to do. That's such a nice little place right there in downtown, and it is. It's just, and I'm not really complaining. I'm just saying it needs to be, we need to be aware of this. It
sounded like you were complaining.
We will hurt business. We will hurt business, and it needs to be,
Sounds like your campaign for governor.
I think that this will come up in the campaign for governor. That's my prediction.
Hello, and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. We may even talk about a stock. We may talk about a sector. We may talk about, who knows, an emerging market. That we may talk favorably or unfavorably, and it doesn't mean you should design your portfolio that way. That's ridiculous, of course. And I know you've heard me say this before, but we're all looking for that hot tip out there. That's not what we do here. We hopefully help you think longer term differently about investing. We just crossed 25,000. 25,000. That's just a number. Pretty good number. And whenever we hit these milestones, I can't help but stop and go, wow. When I started in this industry many moons ago, the Dow was at 800 on its way down to 750 before beginning a 20-year secular bull market. 750, 800, whatever, right in that range. At the time, believe it or not, gold was selling at $800 an ounce. Incredible. We still argue about things like, you know, what do you think about gold? It's the only real store of value. We argue about prices of stocks and what's wrong in the market, what's wrong in the world, and why it just won't work. This time it really will not work. The wealth has been built up for our generations, even more and more wealth, generation after generation. Easiest way to wealth, take a few bucks out of your check, put it away for a few decades, and you're financially independent. Instead of just doing that, we figure out reasons why not. We talk about other asset classes like gold being the only store of value. And it throws us off. It really does. I mean, this is not just gold doesn't work speech. It's why. Why do we do this? Why? Why do we behave so badly with money? Why? When it's so simple, straightforward, put money away regularly, invest in the market for the long term, sit on your hands and quit trying to yank it out or move here or move there. Quit guessing. Put it away. Don't worry about it. You don't even have to fuss about it. And you get rich. Why? Are we like this? In the next couple of weeks, I'm going to record probably an hour on annuities. It'll be out on our website as well. You see, it's not just annuities. I'm not going to bore you to death about how incredibly awful, deceitful these products are. It's important to understand, because whether you do it or somebody else, you're looking at it, they don't work. And it's important enough that we want to have it out on the website so people can reference it. But you see, this is the thing, that when we don't get investing right, it's these kind of horrendous, really pretty much, it's theft products can proliferate, because they can hide behind laws, rules that don't apply to them. Meaning, if you don't carry a securities license, you can basically, you just have to have an insurance license. And since the Department of Insurance in the state of Idaho and some others has decided it's okay to steal money from, to let people steal money from old people and uninformed, then these products exist. They shouldn't, but they do. But why do people buy them? Why? One word. Guarantee. One word. Guarantee. See, people really do know in their heart that they do not get market participation without risk. People know that. Your great-grandmother, who never made it through the ninth grade, knew that. Because we all know that. It just isn't true. But we're going to break that down, and we're going to talk a lot about it. And again, the reason why is this is simple, and people are so fixated on price movement every day that they can't see the big picture. What is my investment worth today, this moment, at the end of the day? You know, I bought something this morning. I wonder what it's selling for today. Have you ever thought of a business that way? Like, I'm going to go into business. I'm going to go into a tire store. Do you price it every day? Would you wonder what the value was at the end of every day? Of course not. Nobody would. But we need to know what our Coca-Cola and our Procter & Gamble and our Apple is worth every single day. And why we would think this would possibly be a good idea. That it would lead us to greater peace in life to fuss over price movements that don't matter. That it would give us greater clarity of long-term investing, of wealth creation. If we just looked every day, somehow this would help? Of course it doesn't. Of course it doesn't. And we get all these, we get very, very fussed up about price movements, and then we get to collaborate with other people through blogging and social media about how bad it is and how it's going to implode over here. And we listen to the people like, you know, Peter Schiff, who's been wrong for a decade. And if you followed his advice, you'd have lost a lot of money. That's right. During one of the greatest bull markets in history, he not only said to stay out, he said you needed to buy commodities. And we still listen. They still parade him around on TV. Every little hiccup in the market, which is normal, certain to occur over and over again all the days of our lives, market corrections. They're normal. Absolutely normal. But every time we get one, it becomes the news. What do we do now? How do we position now? What's the plan now? We cannot possibly manage money, manage our lives correctly when we're running around like a chicken with our head cut off. I don't know. What should I do? I don't know. When we buy great corporations, that's what we're trying to do. And fear sells. Man, does it sell. We are so fearful of any little price movement. It's really something. And I know that's why we're trying to shift this. Try to shift the conversation. What are stocks? They're pieces of ownership of a business. That's what they are. It's not a thing. You own a piece of businesses that make profits, pay dividends, sell stuff. And as long as the world's growing, and it always has, over time, these companies make more and more money, and therefore their value goes up, reflecting the value you hold of the shares of this business. It's a real business. It's not a thing. Bitcoin's a thing, okay? I get that. It's a thing. I don't know what kind of a thing. I don't know what thing this is. Honestly, don't. Doesn't make any sense at all to me. But when we start thinking about asset classes and we start thinking about different ways to invest and what we're investing in, you need to understand that stocks are ownership of a business, not a thing, not a commodity. Ownership of a company that produces something that people buy. And when we think of it that way, and we think of the flow of cash and how it's grown over the decades, centuries, and how the dividends continue to increase decade after decade after decade. Dividends, that's the money you get as an owner of this business. Increases at 3 times the rate of inflation for decades. You see, we think of this wrong. It's an income story. It's the greatest story never told. Is that stocks produce income that rises much faster than inflation consistently. But it's not guaranteed. It just always does. And there's that word again. Guarantee. And that's what we get stuck on. It's got to be guaranteed. Now, I'm sorry, but there are no guarantees. There's nothing, there's no product, no nothing out there that will grow faster than the rate of inflation in its earnings without risk. And what's the point if you can't grow fast enough to keep up with inflation? We have no guarantee. And it's not that people have to be a finance major. Some of us are pretty good at this. But everybody can know enough to put money away and leave it alone. Everyone can. And all we have to do is change from this, I want a guarantee thought. And we need to understand that this is an income story and that you own pieces of growing businesses. That's what this is. I know, it's kind of simple, actually. But man, do we make it hard. Our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. If you prefer, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We need to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd love to hear from you. So do give us a call. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-543-6580-KIDO. That is our number. And once again, if you prefer, email. That's dave@petsofinancial.net. Let's go and go to the phones. We've got Keith on hold. Keith, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Sure thing. Good morning, Mr. Petso. I'm calling about the sector of stocks. So what I did is I had around $4,000 to use up to invest with. And I wanted to buy something safe, long-term. And I was hoping to buy a block of 100 shares. And I couldn't afford, I wanted the energy sector. I couldn't afford Idaho Power, but I could afford a Southwestern power company called Power New Mexico. So I was able to get 100 of their shares. And I intend to hold those shares for 20 or 30 or 40 years. And what do you think about the outlook over that length of time for the energy sector and maybe even that company in particular?
Well, you know, I don't know that company in particular. I don't. And utilities do not intrigue me because they're not innovative and creative. There's a couple of them out there that are doing some interesting things. But basically, they're just a public, they're public entities, right? They're just governmental type entities. Right. And their pricing is based on whether the, you know, the different commissions allow them a rate increase or not. I prefer innovative companies, ones that have growth of their dividend rather than a high dividend, but growth of that dividend to me is a more secure way. An example would be Idaho Power here a few years ago actually cut their dividend quite severely. So if you were relying on that, in other words, they were not only not raising their dividend, they were, in fact, they cut it. So they haven't cut it in a long time. In fact, I think they had a minor increase here a couple of years ago. But the utility sector itself is not one that I would think in terms of holding for the next 20 years. The reason, again, also when we think about power and what's happening technology-wise, I'm not sure that you and I in a few years aren't going to be pretty much making our own power at our own house, solar panels, whatever, wind, stuff we haven't even talked about. But they're certainly doing it without stringing lines, right, power lines everywhere like they used to, out in the wilderness area. I don't see why we won't be doing that in subdivisions. I'm not sure. I'm not trying to predict the downfall of utilities. Just not sure that they're much of a growth business there, frankly.
Well, that's good advice. Thank you very much. I hadn't considered that. So I certainly appreciate your opinion, and I'll take that into account, okay?
You got it, Keith. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Have a great day yourself. And our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. Again, when we talk about, that's an interesting point that kind of came up there, and that's income or growth of income. When you have a high income stock or bond, you simply need to understand that there's a lot of risk in that. Start there. Start there knowing that there's a lot of risk because that's pricing in an excessive return on the dividend. Don't buy yield is what I'm trying to say. And then further, when you're analyzing that, you're thinking about it. I want to look at this stock. It pays a lot. I wonder why it pays like 9%. Why is this dividend that high? And if you really can't figure it out, then remind yourself of the old poker adage, right? When you sit down at a table and you need to look over all the players because you got to find out who the mark is. And if you can't figure it out, it's you. So what we want to understand is that you don't buy high yield. Don't buy yield. Buy growth. Growth of that income. There are companies out there that may only pay 2%, maybe even less. But they're rapidly growing. Their cash flows are growing. And so they have ample room to pay more and more and more. Watch what's called the payout ratio on all companies. If they're paying out all, or in some cases even excess income, they have to go borrow money to pay the dividends? Not a good long-term story, right? But if they don't have a lot of excess to grow their business. It may be a long time from now, but it will happen. They will cut their dividend because something will go wrong. Unless there's excess, eventually something's going to go wrong. That dividend will get cut, and the stock itself, of course, will get crushed. And your income play won't be quite an income play that it was before, will it? So be careful of it. Be careful of high yields. Definitely be careful of high yields. They can be extremely dangerous, and they are enticing. They really are. But particularly if I could, I'm going to roll with this just for one more second before we go to Fox News, okay? This is an important point of how a lot of different, not just Ponzi schemes, but general investments that aren't very good, okay, that are just not good investments, they focus on income. Now, if you gave me, say, $100,000, and I gave you back $10,000 a year for the next 10 years, and that's all I gave you back, I didn't give you any return. I just gave you your capital back. And so many investments have been structured that way where they actually have in the past paid out of capital in order to look like the investment was doing well. It, of course, never ends that way when you're eating up the capital. It never ends well. But it's a very good, deceptive thing to bring money in. So be very, very careful that you do careful analysis, especially with private investments. It just, wow, is just a terrible area, so unregulated. Just I really recommend people just stay away from it. You know, whether it's real estate loans and all those things, it's just not a regulated area. So be very careful in that. All right, we got to take a break for Fox News. And when we come back, we want to talk with you at 580-5436. 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Plenty of time left in today's program. If you want to call in, please do. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Right now, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. How's it going?
Outstanding, sir. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Being that I'm your pretty much regular caller, I've decided to promote myself. I'm now calling myself your co-host.
That's right. I like it. I like it.
Anyway, your last caller was asking about PNM Resources in New Mexico, mm-hmm. you know?
And that was, you're from New Mexico, aren't you?
Yep. Yeah, that was the first stock I bought. I maybe right after or during the crash or the Great Recession, whatever, back in 2008. And I saw a thing on the business report about it. At the time, they were paying 7.9%. Well, right after I bought them, I bought 500 shares. Right after I bought them, they cut the dividend in half to like 3.95. Anyway, right now, I mean, last year, PNM Resources went up 17.9%. And currently, they're paying 2.17% dividend, and per annum from 2008 through 16, they've gone up 22.4% per annum, based on the cost basis.
Right, right, right.
So anyway, I kind of like them. I mean, I don't know exactly what they do, but they're still around and they do it pretty well, apparently.
They do, and utilities have been obviously are pretty insulated. You know, they're just again, they're like government bodies; they're monopolies, and so it isn't exactly, if you will, a some place that is going to be innovative and creative. They just don't tend to be. They probably shouldn't be. I guess a manager of something that's a monopoly ought to try to just keep it a monopoly and not try to do anything crazy.
But like you mentioned the word guarantee. There's no guarantee, but you might say there's probably less risk or more. They're more stable somewhat.
Absolutely. And you point out there is no guarantee. I mean, as soon as you bought it, it cut its dividend in half. So these things all even monopolies have a problem from time to time. We all have to recognize
that. But you were talking about yield, you know. I mean, anytime you see a yield of 7 or 8%, you know, little red flags ought to be going off.
They ought to be bombs bursting in air going off. I'm telling you, that's it. These are not things to ignore. They are things to understand that you do not know what you're talking about if you do not understand what the risk is in that situation.
Well, one thing I got and I recently sold was CenturyLink. Now, when I bought CenturyLink years ago, it's been going down ever since, right? Now, they haven't cut their dividend. Well, the dividend was 8-something. They cut it by 25% to 6-something, and they've considered, I think, 6.25, and they've maintained that. But based on the current price, the dividend is now about 12 to 15%. Something's wrong with that picture.
Right, exactly. It totally is. These companies are folding up shop quickly. Frontier's another one. The question there is there enough business left there to continue enough of a dividend and still have some residual value to pay all the debt they have, because there's a ton of debt. These companies have continued to cut their dividends, but the stock prices have gone down so much that the dividend yield is very high. But again, it's a disintegrating business. The question is are they going to be able to reinvent themselves in some way, shape, or form, or sell off assets to return to shareholders? That's the analysis you have to do. I'm not saying people can't own a Frontier or a CenturyLink, but to buy it on yield, as you point out, is a really bad idea.
Yeah. So, I don't know, risk and whatever. So, anyway, who knows how long it'll last, and maybe everybody ought to start breeding bulls.
That's right. No more bears. The bear market has been expelled from the room.
You know, as much as Trump is pissing off the liberals, he loves it. He absolutely loves it. I mean, they are going mad, you know. I mean, late-night comedians, number one, using the word comedian is a bad, they are not comedic. And the only thing they have to do is bitch about Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think they'd find funnier things in the whole wide world than that, but they don't. And so you're right. It's a conundrum for them. They don't know what to do because...
The days of Bill Cosby and Bob Newhart, sadly, are over. So, I mean, good comedy.
Well, we'll see. Things rotate, Jim. Be optimistic. Come on, you old curmudgeon. It'll be okay.
I just want my, I'm still with Frenchman. I just want my landline telephone bill to go down. So
That's.
I'm a curmudgeon, all right. Well, take care and have a great 2018.
Thank you. You have a good day now, Jim. Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hey, before we jump off to a break here, I wanted to touch on a couple of things that I think are just super important to understand underlying this market. The economy is growing so strong right now, and this does not include tax reform. That's the thing that I just can't stress enough. That when we are suddenly seeing the economy growing by 3% from 2, that tells you something's going on. Because no reform had taken place. Three quarters in a row we're at 3%. The acceleration is picking up. Consumer confidence, business confidence is at all-time highs. That's why. The economy is so dynamic. People are dynamic. They're incredible. I mean, you think about this. Human beings are like the politicians and sometimes economists act like we are stupider than an amoeba. Now, why do I say that? Because an amoeba, at least if you poke it or you heat it up, it will move. It reacts. A single cell, no brain, reacts to the environment. What in the world do you think human beings do? When you tell business that, you know what, the rules are not going to get worse anymore. The rules are here, and we're going to work to maybe make them better, but they're not getting worse. Then business can simply say, okay, now we know what the ground conditions are. We can move forward. for 8 years. Business was under constant assault. Constant assault. And when we have that kind of assault, business pulls back. And when you let business know it's not going to get worse, I mean, do you think it's just in a vacuum that business confidence is at record levels, that consumer confidence is exploding, that people feel empowered to spend, open businesses expand? This is before tax reform. Yeah, market's too high. Too high. It's been too high for what, 10,000 points? 15,000 points. Whatever. Market's correct. Periodically and absolutely certainly. Before, again, assaulting new all-time highs. This happens all of your life. It will keep happening. There may be a correction tomorrow. Think you're going to time that one? Enjoy the ride. It's better peace in your life as well. I got to take a break here. And when we come back, I know we've got a phone call here. And hopefully your phone calls at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Plenty of time left in today's program. I hope you will ring us up. Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Please do give us a call. We've got plenty of time left in today's program. All right, I think we have a caller. Is it Brian?
Richard?
Oh, Richard, I'm sorry. Sorry, looked at the wrong name. Sorry, Richard, thank you.
Yes, I was wondering about such a good year in 17. How did you decide when to take profits or trim positions?
Excellent question. You know, all in all, it's a very good question. What you really need to be thinking in terms of is, are we looking to now, do I need the money coming up, right? So otherwise, why am I trimming? It's been a nice ride. It's worth more. I'm getting increased dividends from my portfolio. No real reason to be worried about or thinking about whether you're trying to trim or not. When you are needing the money, that's when you need to do it. But that's really more of a function of, hey, I need to trim when I need to trim, which means I need money in next year or two. I want to get it out when the market's okay. Because corrections are normal, corrections are certain, and so we do need to take it out if you are going to need some. So other than that, I don't think that there's any real reason to say, I need to reallocate or get out or trim the positions unless it's become so large. For example, fortunately, I've owned Apple for a long time, and it's done really well. I needed to trim some because it simply became too much of the portfolio. I like it, and I still think the outlook is good, but it's time to trim it a little bit. And so that's the type of, if within your own portfolio, you do want to try to trim it back. But unless you need the money, there's really no worries about what the current valuation is unless the company may not be able to pay its dividend anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm looking to get my house paid off because I'm retired. So it isn't a big need, but it's something that's scheduled this year. So
Right. Well, if you're wanting to do it, you need to do it. It's a cash flow question. What are you thinking?
Well, I want to do it. So
okay. When you retire, you want to do it. You want, and that should help with cash flow. Then I would say you should trim now. I not because I'm predicting a downturn. If anything, I think the market is, absolutely on fire here, and there's no reason to think that's going to change, except that it does, right?
Yeah.
And so because it just does change and corrections occur, you probably need to be ready for that. So anyway, I would go ahead and say that's a good time, and go ahead and pay it off. If okay. that's what your desire Thank is, you. Within the next 12 months, you're telling me I need money. In the next 12 months, I need some money.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you, sir. You have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. And by the way, next week, Jennifer Stone is going to be in, so you get to listen to her. She is awesome, as you all know. So she's going to be taking the show next week. Don't know exactly what she'll be talking about, but I'm sure it will be very interesting. She does a great job, and I'm looking forward to listening to that as well. Okay? Sophia, thank you for your call. I know you couldn't stay on the phone. What sectors look good now for fresh money in international and domestic markets? That's funny, because I was just going to do an email, and thanks for sending that as well, Joe, about that same question. What is a good sector, if you will, a hot sector, a cheap sector was really, not hot, cheap. What looks attractive? Well, that is tough in today's environment. It really is. An environment of, I would call it, relative valuations. Relative valuations. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean that stocks are clearly cheaper than cash, which earns nothing. Stocks are cheaper than bonds, which, again, the interest rate's too low. So relatively speaking, stocks look good. And frankly, I don't know why you wouldn't want to be in during an environment when earnings have just been increased for some companies by 10% or more. Instantly. Instantly. And that was with the tax cut. So are they going to pay more dividends? Probably. Are they going to buy back more stock? Probably. Is that bad? They're not going to expand their businesses at all? Hey, they're going to do all of the above, I would guess. Some companies more than others. But either way, corporations are going to have more cash to expand and grow or buy back stock. Either way, it's good for stockholders. So if we're looking overall around the world for relative cheap, because there is no flat out cheap, right? There just isn't. If we're looking relative, though, although I'm not exactly thrilled, I'd have to say you've got to look at energy. Prices have increased massively in that space, and many, many, many people have been knocked out of that business. Now, if you have less people in it, and you are looking at more, you know, less debt that's in this particular sector, a very, very big deal. So that's a really cheap area. The other one is emerging markets. Because you ask globally, emerging markets are very, very cheap compared to U.S. and in spite of the fact that they had almost 40% gains last year. So they look very, very attractive. All right. So there you have it. So thank you for that. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you would like to quickly slip in before this program is done. Dow 25,000. Dow 25,000. Just a number. 800. 800 when I started in this industry. 800 to 25,000 is one heck of a run. Amazing amount of wealth, abundance that's been created. Amazing. All as corporations, for selfish reasons, they want to make more money. That's what they do. I want to make some more money. Okay? Isn't that crazy? How an individual, right, the invisible hand, Adam Smith's invisible hand, you know, each individual, for their own and their family's well-being, striving
helps all of society. Amazing. Amazing when you think about that. How much growth there's been in the 35 years I've been in the industry. It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. 800 to 25,000. We shouldn't be trying to figure out when that ends. That's where I think people get into so much trouble. Why would you want to try to figure out when it ends? When you can't. Nobody can. And people have been zigging and zagging and messed this thing up so terribly. And frankly, we talk about this from time to time, and I've certainly talked about it on this show. When people are overly, I don't know how to say it. Let me rephrase that. When people are studying the markets, grinding over the data, looking up more and more economic reports, and they're really smart, they're analytical people. When this happens, it really messes people up. It really does. I know, we all do. We all think we're so smart. And that we're supposed to learn. That's what we've taught. We want to learn about things. And again, I want to remind you about the Fidelity study of all of their shareholders. And they have a lot. All through their brokerage. And, you know, data has to be given, right? You have to have this data to open up an account. You know, your education and all these things. How much money you make. And, you know, when they wanted to find out who the best investors were. You know, is it the people with a master's degree, some college, no college? And they found that the best investors were the people that forgot they had an account. Didn't even know they had one. Because they left it alone. They left it alone. And I think that one of the great battles that we have, really great battles that we all have to deal with, is our own ability to outfox ourselves. As the British say, clever by half. We are so smart. We are so tuned in. We are plugged in, wired in, social media. We've got blogs coming everywhere. We know every bad thing in the world times 10. And I mean times 10, probably more like times a million. I mean, the simplicity of the whole thing is the world has never been more at peace. Does it feel like that to you? Because it sure doesn't to me. But that's a fact. The murder rate, I just saw it reported today. The murder rate in the cities is at all-time lows. Does it feel like that? If we're too clever, we read too much, and we don't understand and pull back from the simplicity that the world is abundant and growing, we can miss the whole thing. We can miss all of this. And I think that's the great trick. We've got to pull back. It doesn't mean you actually forget you have an account, but it kind of does. You got to leave it alone. And don't be clever by half. We all know people like that. We don't want to be like that too, right? All right, thank you so much. I hope you all have a great weekend. And again, Jennifer Stone will be in next week. And then, of course, we'll be rolling after that. Have a great rest of the weekend, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petso Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petso, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petso Financial Consultants are not affiliated affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Pezzo and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.